You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 1st of February 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we've prepared a primer on the recent move by the European Central Bank to embark on a programme of quantitative easing. We'll take a look at the history of this policy and assess its impact across the Eurozone. We start with Paul Donovan, Deputy Head of Global Economics at UBS, who places the ECB's decision to pursue quantitative policy in a historical context and explains why the move has inevitably proved controversial.
The first thing to say is that all central banks engage in the buying and selling of bonds all the time as part of normal operations. And so if we look back historically, the Bundesbank was actually quite aggressive in targeting the quantity of money in circulation in the economy. It had a policy which tried to control money supply. That's a quantitative policy. However, when the ECB was created, there was a very strong desire that the ECB should not get sucked into fiscal policy. And so it should conduct its buying and selling operations to control liquidity in the economy without being too aggressive about it. And the reason that quantitative policy has become so controversial in the Eurozone is that it injects monetary stimulus through the large-scale buying of government bonds, and there is a fear that this might contribute to inflation, and there is a fear that this may well also contribute to a relaxation of pressure on some of the governments of Europe when it comes to things like fiscal reform, when it comes to making sure that their finances are in order.
What about those Eurozone divisions Paul Donovan mentions? What's the current position, especially in light of the recent parliamentary elections in Greece? Well, there's a sense of resentment from certain northern European nations, in particular Germany and Finland.
There are still, I think, very clear differences between different parts of the Eurozone and indeed within the ECB itself. And actually, I think one of the main consequences that comes out of the ECB's decision to embrace quantitative policy isn't actually economic. I mean, frankly speaking, economically, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference beyond weakening the euro a little bit. The main consequence is that it has built resentment in some of the northern European countries, most notably Germany, but also, I think, Finland, that they feel their concerns are not being heard, that their control of their currency, which in Germany, of course, is a very, very key issue after two hyperinflation episodes in the 20th century, that their loss of control has now become a big point.
We'll be considering the political picture elsewhere in the Eurozone a little later in the programme. Reinhard Kluse, the chief economist for Europe at UBS Investment Bank, explains why the ECB is doing QE. It's all about inflation, he says.
The ECB is an inflation-targeting central bank. So the ECB has the target of keeping inflation close to but below 2%. But what we see is that inflation is currently well below the target. I mean, inflation in the Eurozone was at minus 0.2% in December, so well below the target, and it might go down further over the next couple of months. So we've seen a significant process of disinflation in recent months and quarters. At the same time, the ECB has already cut its interest rates essentially to zero.
But how tricky is it to keep all the conflicting interests across the Eurozone happy? There are 19 countries after all. As Reinhard Kluse explains, it's a one-size-fits-all policy, and that's never easy.
I mean, it is difficult. The European Central Bank, you know, makes monetary policy not for one country as in the US or the UK or Japan. It does it for now 19 countries. So the ECB has to conduct a one-size-fits-all monetary policy. And of course, this one-size-fits-all monetary policy might not be good for everyone in the monetary union. That's one issue. The other is that there are more philosophical concerns about quantitative easing by the ECB. I mean, some countries, and above the Germans and their allies, they believe that quantitative easing is essentially an unwarranted mixture of monetary and fiscal policy. These people are concerned about moral hazard, about a weakening of the incentives on the side of the weaker Eurozone countries, those countries that should do more structural reform. So they believe that the more the ECB helps these countries, the less they will do to reform their economies. And the third thing is also that people are concerned that the ECB now buys assets which might subsequently default one day in the future, so that the ECB would then have to be recapitalized at the cost of the European taxpayer.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll consider the view from Germany, Italy and Spain. For a view from Berlin, let's hear from Andreas Klut, bureau chief in the city for The Economist. He says it's not instructive to even talk about a Berlin view.
The Chancellor Angela Merkel, of course, is very careful not to say too much in any direction about what the ECB does, because she would never want to appear to call into question the independence of the ECB. And the same goes for Wolfgang Schäuble, the finance minister, and others. But in their political parties and in the political mainstream, the political elite, that's not even necessarily in Berlin, but throughout the country, the prevailing view towards the ECB and its policies lately, since 2012, is negative. In particular, for example, there is a character named Peter Gauweiler. He's a quite a notable politician in the Christian Social Union. That's the Bavarian sister party of Angela Merkel's party. And he has filed several lawsuits with the Supreme Court of Germany against the ECB. And of course, he's now filed another lawsuit, again suing it. And again, he expresses sort of an extreme version of the German mainstream view, which is that the central bank of the ECB is straying beyond its mandate.
Is there any way that Mario Draghi and his colleagues at the ECB can change tack to keep Angela Merkel and other dissatisfied parties at least remotely happy?
Draghi is in a difficult position, and he's actually, if you look closely at the details, which are often very boring details on sort of page 50, but he gives concessions to Germany. It's very important to him to please not to fall out completely with German public opinion. In the structure of the quantitative easing program that they just announced, the original plan was for the ECB to buy all these government bonds. Well, now you've noticed that a lot of the buying will be done by the national central banks that are members of the ECB, and that is a concession to Germany, because that means the risk for those bonds will not immediately be shared by the entire Eurozone. So he's trying very hard, but at the end of the day, he has to do what he thinks is right. And I have to tell you, that is increasingly just not what Jens Weidmann, the German of the ECB Council, or a lot of other Germans think is right.
Andreas Klut. That's the view from Germany, but what about Spain and Italy? Is there a north-south divide in the Eurozone? Paul Donovan again.
ECB has been divided, simply put, between the northern and the southern Europeans. The Teutonic cry of "we must have discipline" is echoing very strongly. The Germans want monetary discipline, they want fiscal discipline, whereas the periphery and the southern European countries have been more inclined to say, well, a little bit of liquidity injection wouldn't be a problem.
Diego Valiente is research fellow at the European Capital Markets Institute and the Centre for European Policy Studies in Brussels.
There is also a dimension that has been neglected, which concerns on having resources to help the banking system that in Italy is actually struggling very much, where we have non-performing loans that have reached 20% of total assets. So this is certainly good news, both from the establishment, the political establishment, and the bureaucrats in the central banks from that point of view. But certainly we have also to say that this is also limited. That does not address the underlying structural issues that, as I said, are very important, especially in Italy, where the banking system is struggling to be restructured and where you have a strong political interference in the governance of banks.
Spain is similarly dependent on SMEs, but there are differences.
There are some similarities in the fact that the national economies are based both on, for instance, on the small and medium enterprises that are in both countries struggling to getting access to credit, which remains very costly. But there are also divergences because we know Spain has gone through also a financial program run by institutions, especially for the restructuring of the banking system. This has allowed essentially consolidation among small banks that were highly inefficient to some extent. And so Spain, from that front, is coming out much stronger.
There are some critical political changes that flow from this, according to Paul Donovan.
When we look across Europe, and particularly in southern Europe and in countries like France, the rise of anti-establishment parties, parties which essentially define themselves as being against things, has gathered pace. And that in part is a result of the persistent weak economic performance of a number of these countries, the feeling that living standards are declining and that conventional politics doesn't offer a solution to that. So we've got here any number of cross currents. The ECB has, through its actions, stoked resentment, I think, in a political as well as an economic sense from several northern European countries. But at the same time, the ECB is recognizing perhaps the political reality that a number of southern European countries are turning to unconventional political parties in an attempt to try and mitigate the very prolonged effects of what has been, for many of these countries, a very severe economic downturn.
How do recent events in Greece and the return of Syriza with their avowedly anti-austerity ticket, coupled with the ECB's QE, shape the landscape in the rest of the Eurozone? Here are the insights of veteran journalist and author of a new book called The Italians, John Hooper.
I think that there is certainly a hope that Syriza's victory in Greece will help to turn opinion in Germany. I'm not sure of that. I really feel that the Germans are not going to be influenced in the way that Italians rather hope they will be. I think for Italians it's a more difficult equation than for the Spanish, because you can trace some kind of similarity between Syriza and the Podemos movement in Spain. Whereas in Italy, that kind of frustration and anger with austerity has largely been channeled into Beppe Grillo's five-star movement. And that's a different beast. It's not a left-wing party necessarily. It's more of a... It's a very difficult party to define. It's ultimately a revolutionary party, but the revolution that it wants to bring about is one in terms of political representation through the internet. So there's no easy way to translate Syriza onto the Italian scene other than to a party of the left led by the governor of Puglia, Nicky Vendola. So maybe that will benefit as a result of Syriza's victory.
In summary then, what is the short-term objective of the ECB in delving into quantitative policy now, years after the likes of the Bank of England and the Fed? Frankly, says Paul Donovan, there may not be one.
To be perfectly honest, I don't think there is that much of a short-term objective. The language around the introduction of quantitative policy was, in economic terms, extremely dubious. I mean, the claims that the Eurozone is threatened by deflation border on nonsensical. You know, there is an oil price fall, but that's not deflation. That's actually a stimulus to the economy, not something we need to worry about. I think that the issue was that as soon as the concept of quantitative policy had been raised, then the ECB had to follow through. Because if the markets had not been given quantitative policy, there would have been an adverse reaction in financial markets, which would have been economically damaging. So the risks around quantitative policy became asymmetric. I think that the ECB would be naive to believe that the banking system is suddenly going to start lending money just because the ECB is buying more bonds. That, I think, is unlikely to happen. The banking system will eventually lend more money, but it's a slow, steady process of evolution over, I think, the period of the next 18 months or so. So what does the ECB achieve with quantitative policy? Well, it weakens the euro. I think that the signal that the ECB intends to diverge from the Federal Reserve in the course of its policy, and it keeps the policy accommodative for longer, that will lead to the weakening of the euro that we've already seen. What does a weaker euro achieve? Well, a weaker euro does not boost GDP. What it does is it boosts the profits of exporting companies. And the critical question for the ECB over the next 6 to 9 months is, do those eurozone exporters take their newfound profits and invest in Europe, hire new workers, pay higher wages, or perhaps lend some of that money to their customers, what's called intercompany credit? And that's going to be, I think, the only way in which the quantitative policy could have any meaningful stimulus on the eurozone economy.
So that's how quantitative policy might shape up in the medium term. But what does all this mean for private investors right now? Making sense of the policy is Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, who explains that there are multiple impacts. He outlines the three key themes for clients.
The reaction to the most recent easing announcements by the QE among our client base, I guess, was multifaceted. On one hand, the bonds that many of our clients here in Europe and Switzerland hold obviously rallied pretty significantly post-event. So from a capital perspective, they made money. However, now looking to deploy new capital, de minimis yields, and in fact negative yields in Switzerland, you know, out almost 14 years now, hardly make for a compelling, you know, new investment proposition. In addition to that, QE has obviously pushed down cash returns for the foreseeable future. Interest rates aren't going up, and in fact, we've just seen relatively recently both the ECB and SNB introduce negative deposit rates. So in a world where fixed income, say fixed income that you've traditionally invested in, now offer negative yields, where cash is not yielding anything, it's a fairly unexciting investment outlook for many of our more conservative clients.
Secondly, according to Simon,
there's a general scepticism whether this latest round of QE will actually work, whether, given where yields are starting, given the outlook for the economy in Europe, given the structural issues Europe continues to have, you know, whether simply purchasing assets, the ECB will actually be able to stimulate inflation and be able to stimulate growth. So this kind of scepticism or lack of clarity about whether this will work has also generally led to a reticence among clients to necessarily buy European equities on the back of this QE announcement, despite here at UBS us moving to a moderate overweight position ourselves in the eurozone equities.
And finally, the third facet to consider.
We've had a lot of interest and increasing interest from clients to lock in longer-term loan rates. While they're not anything on the cash, they want to lock in increasingly the fixed rates, very, very low nominal rates, lock in for extended periods of time here in Switzerland, but also in Europe.
Simon Smiles there. And that brings us to the end of this 17th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.